But that isn't where the problem is, you know. What really happened, really happened. The problem is 14 years later with the distorted memory of what happened. See, the first time I remember it, that isn't what happened at all. It's already colored by my own reaction and by the first person I talked to who told me whatever they tell me. And I keep replaying that, and 14 years later, it has nothing to do with what really happened. My troubles truly are of my own making. I've got to clear that away so I can get to the real event and say, the old son of a bitch ought to be horsewhipped. But maybe he was spiritually sick to be able to do something like that. And I don't want to be owned by his sickness. But first, I've got to clear it back. Okay? How can we escape? Well, this is how we deal with resentment. Not by writing it. I'm not making it up. It says, here's how we deal with it. This is our course. We realize that these people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. That's very carefully worded. I don't get to say that's a sick son of a bitch. That's still a judgment. Perhaps they were spiritually sick when they committed this act. What does that mean? For me, what being spiritually sick means is that I'm cut off from my spiritual source. And when I'm cut off, I behave very badly. Maybe that's why they're doing that. Don't have to like it. That's what it says. Though we didn't like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Kind of levels the playing field. I can work with anybody because I am capable of anything. And I know that. How can I judge you when I know I am capable of anything? Because throughout my life I have done things that tell me I am capable of anything. They, like myself, are perhaps spiritually sick, cut off from their source. One of the great spiritual principles of all time, it's come forward since man began to be able to communicate spiritually, is that of forgiveness, which means to make as if it never happened. The only way I can be free is to set you free in my mind. Okay? How do I do that? Because I don't know how. I can come to this place and I'm still pissed at that federal agent. Okay? He almost killed my kid. The stepping on the neck is nothing. That's just drama. That's good storytelling. He almost shot my kid. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And I ran into immediate difficulty because I did not have patience, pity, and sympathy for sick people. They frightened me. I had to have a script for every event in my life. There's nothing spontaneous about my life. I had to know how to react so that you'd like me, or at least not dislike me. And there's only one script for visiting with sick people. Is there anything I can do for you? And that terrified me, because they might ask me to do something. Change a bedpan, God forbid. Spend an hour with me and read a story to me, will you? I'm sorry, I'm really busy. Run to the store and get this. Whatever they would ask me. So I didn't have that. I had to pray for that. I am so self-centered that I've got to pray just for the tolerance and pity for sick people, for God's sake. So when a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. There's a funny thing that I've heard running around the country where if you resent somebody, pray that they get everything you want. Isn't that silly? Why would I pray that you get everything I want? Pray that they get everything they want. That's even sillier. God save me from being angry. I have no idea, nor am I stupid enough to think I know what's good for you. God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. There's a whole new way of thinking. Do you get it? I go to God in prayer because I don't know what to do. We avoid retaliation and argument. Well, and that doesn't always mean just out here. Most of my argument and retaliation always took place here. because I can win here. 100% of the time I win an argument in my head. Because I noticed early on, I'd spend a couple hours getting a really good argument wrapped up and had it won. And then I'd come to you and start it, and you didn't know your lines. Blew my whole deal right out the window. So I quit doing that. I just kept them here. And if you don't know, puh. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people. But God will at least show us how to take a kind and tolerant view toward each and every one, and that's a basic prayer for a spiritual mind. God, I'm incapable of taking a tolerant view toward this person or a kindly view. Please show me how. Now, I don't believe God tests me, but I test God all the time. The first time here, I thought, I got you. You got to understand, I had a bad attitude, even awake. Show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view toward Adolf Hitler, I says. And pretty soon, I found myself thinking about Volkswagens. And realized, whoops. Now, he stole the idea from Porsche. But he made that car for the people. Whatever his motives were, he did one decent thing in his life. He gave us all bugs. The important thing wasn't the car. The important thing was the prayer was answered immediately. I was shown how to take a kindly and tolerant view. Then I was shown how to just forget that kind of silliness and get on about life. But the prayer got answered. It's a new way of thinking. And I must have it or I won't be able to answer the rest of these questions. Show me how to find out where I've been selfish. I don't know how. Show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view. My dad did a couple things along the way that were wrong. And the kindly and tolerant view that I got was to understand that he was passing on what was passed on to him that had been passed on for generations. And he didn't want to do that, but he didn't know anything else. And maybe if I'll change, I won't pass it on. Let the buck stop with me. But I got to get off of his back first. My father and grandfather were the top men in the Colorado Ku Klux Klan back in the late 30s. Had some funky ideas around my house for a while. I knew they were bullshit from the time I was little. I didn't say that. But they both awakened and changed and went a different path and put the robes away. And I think today, wouldn't it have been awful if I'd have kept the robes on them after they took them off? But throughout my life, that's what I did with people. I left your robes on after you had taken them off. Okay? Show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view toward all of this. Because I don't know how. Isn't that a whole new way of thinking? Ah, oh, and you got to have it or you can't even answer the next questions. Jerry?
This part of the little instructions is perhaps very dear to me because one of the experiences I had in going through this the first time, there was both a great deal of humor but also a great deal of tragedy involved in my life up until this particular point in time. And had it not been for this spiritual key that's laid out for us here, I would not have recovered. Just simply that simple. Many of you heard me last night, and I was talking, and I had my mother on my inventory. She was big on my inventory, by the way. But there was one particular incident when I was 13 years old. And the way I could remember that incident and the way it had been warped in my mind was that I had been terribly, terribly physically abused. Now, I believe that. That was my truth. And as I was telling you last night, I went through the first three columns of the inventory, and I'm an alky, and I don't follow instructions. And so I don't pray and I don't do any of this here. I just know that there's a fourth column and I want to hurry up and get it done. So I'm in the fourth column on this particular incident where I'm sure that I've just been terribly and horribly physically abused at a young age of 13. And so I cannot see where I've been selfish and self-seeking, dishonest and afraid. I can't find anything that I need to inventory in that fourth column. And so I called my sponsor, and that was when I went through all these gyrations, and he said, that sounds like therapy shit. And here's the beauty of sponsorship for me on this little spiritual path, is those folks who stay true to this little deal of ours said, okay, wait a minute, you need to pray, number one. And he talked about these prayers here. And then that little part in the book, it says, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done. We're going to try to disregard that other person entirely. And so I did the prayer, crudely. Don't ever let me lead you to believe that I'm a great prayer. I talk to God as I understand Him and tell Him what my difficulties are. But I follow the prayers the way they're laid out in the book, simply because these still look like to me to be fantastic and effective prayer. At any rate, there was a transformation in my mind that somehow, as I began to remember clearly that incident, my mother went into the background, and I began to see a shabby, scammy little guy and what I was doing. And my whole life began to get infinitely clear to me, and that what it was I had told my mother on this particular instance, and it was a rare occasion, I had told her the truth when she asked me a question, and she thought that I was lying to her. And, of course, I swore and swore and swore that I was being truthful to her. And she said, no, I just know you're not telling me the truth. And I just terribly frustrated her. Now, what some of you don't know is that my mother is not very big. She's a tiny, small woman. And even at age 13, I was a kid that kind of matured a little bit fast. And so I was pretty physically fit by the time I was 13. And she got disturbed with me and began to chase me around the house with a broom. Now, I'm 13. I don't remember how old she was at that time, but she couldn't keep up with me. But you know what she really hurt? She hurt my pride, because my little brothers were sitting there watching this deal, and I was just terribly embarrassed. But I also, something else, I saw a little deal there where, I had lied to her my whole life. I mean, literally, little things that were unimportant. And I had frustrated her terribly. Now, let me tell you the rest of what I saw in this whole little deal as I began to look at that. My mother had married, my mother, by the way, is my stepmother, although I don't know of her as anything except my mother, because she and my father were married when I was very young. And she was the youngest in her family, and she took a lot of criticism when she married my father because he already had a child. In those days, that was kind of a forbidden deal, to marry a man who had already been married before and had a child. That wasn't looked upon real well by her family. And she was out to prove that she had made the right decision and that she would raise this young boy and he would turn out all right. Now, what she didn't know was that she was trying to raise a lunatic. And she was doing literally the very best she could, she couldn't understand why a kid would just apparently intentionally lie all the time. And that just terribly frustrated her. She didn't hurt me. Hell, she never touched me. My memory was twisted, completely twisted. And like I say, I began to see the truth about me. And here's the real strange part about that whole deal was, I had up until that moment in time thought well of myself. I really did. If you were to have asked me up to that moment in time, Jerry, who's the most honest man that you know? In my delusional state, I would have been properly modest. But ultimately, I would have had to tell you it was me. So then I began to look okay and say, okay, what was it I was afraid of? There's a whole lot of things came out of that little prayer and out of this transformation of the mind, because I discovered that I can lie without even knowing I'm lying. My mind will even lie to me. See, a part of what was going on that day, I was 13 years old. It was a Friday afternoon. And I thought my mother said to me, where are you going? And what she had said to me is, where are you going to go? She was just kind of interested in where I was going to go, and then the rest of this all kind of blew up. I said, I'm going uptown. And she said, why? And I said, well, all the guys are going to be up there. You hear a little lie in that? I don't know who all is going to be up there, but I think all the guys are going to be up there. And I'm afraid that I'm not going to be up there with them, and if I'm not up there with them, they're not going to like me. Does that sound petty? God, it sounds terribly petty to me as I tell you about it. But that's the story of my life, and that's the story of my inventory, too, by the way. Oh, I've got another one. Some of you heard me last night. I carried a resentment for years. My mother made me wear elastic jeans when I was starting the third grade, and all the other guys wore belted jeans, you know. What was going on there? It was my fear. My fear, what am I going to look like when I go to school and all these hip-slicking cool guys? And, you know, and I'm 47 years old when I'm doing this inventory. And I tell you what, a guy does not want to take this kind of stuff over to his sponsor and do a fifth step on it. I think I'm a mean some bitch, and when I show up with this kind of stuff, I mean, this guy's going to probably laugh me out of his house. And so I have to look at these instructions and said, what am I afraid of? See, every time that little phrase, self-esteem, is involved. Self-esteem is when somebody has just humiliated the heck out of me. And all that really comes down to is I'm just living in total fear of what you think about me. God, I'm afraid I'm just not going to look good. How have I been dishonest? That's what it says. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? My selfishness doesn't just involve what I want to do. It involves what I want you to do so I can do what I want to do. I want to go around the world tomorrow. It's no big deal. But if I insist that my wife give me about $25,000 or $30,000 to do it and she doesn't do it and I get pissed off because she won't do it, then I've begun to get a little selfish, see? And as I went through and I looked at these instructions, I realized that a great deal of my life was truly based on fear. I could find it in each and every one of them. And it says there, but there's another little part that is really a fascinating little deal. It says, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. The word resolutely, by the way, suggests that there's going to take some effort. We don't like to do anything. That's in my nature, by the way. If it's hard to do, I ain't going to do it. But I'd made a commitment to do this, and it says we resolutely looked at our own mistakes. What's the mistake? Well, I'll tell you. My mistake is always in the way I think. It's always in the way I think. See, I'll have an idea. Well, if I do this, you should do that. And that's the mistake in my thinking. Well, I may do this, and you may not do that. I don't know what you're going to do. It's none of my business, really. All right, see, one of the things that I had been taught as a young man is if I work hard, I'll get ahead. All right? Work hard and you get ahead. You know, I've discovered something. You may work hard and you may not get ahead. That's like a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. I am from a small town. But I've discovered through a number of little inventories, and they're simple little things. That was a part of my thinking that I came in here with. That if I do this, then this is what you should do. I didn't know. I've discovered something since this all transpired. I've discovered, years ago, some of the folks that were around me says, virtue is its own reward. And I thought that was BS. Virtue is its own, what do you mean? I've discovered that sometimes there is great joy in working hard just to be working hard. Just to do the very best you can today. There's a lot of joy in that, by the way. Not always, but sometimes you'll discover it. Look at my own mistakes. My mistake is always in my thinking. Selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, and fear. One of the most brutal ways that I have found for me to do this part of the process is to look at dishonesty. It's the easiest one for me to find. It was the hardest one for me to find initially. My very first inventory was the hardest thing for me to find was dishonesty. Well, I haven't been dishonest. Again, thanks to the prayers and the transformation, the gentleness of the Spirit. By the way, I never have received any sudden burst, any illuminating burst. The Spirit has always moved very quietly for me, and all of a sudden I realize that I'm thinking a different way. And I'll have a clarity that I didn't have before. And so one of the things I've discovered is my dishonesty is always there. I mean, it literally is always there. I've never found a resentment where I didn't have some dishonesty involved. It's always shows up. Sometimes now, just for the heck of it, I will start with my dishonesty because I know this. If I am dishonest, not just the lie itself, but there's a whole thread of spiritual unfitness involved. Because I'm now trying to protect something. I'm now trying to protect something. One of the last things that this thing finishes with, it says, we also looked at our fault. We also looked at our fault. And you know what my fault is? I react. When something goes wrong and I have to be in fear and I have to then ultimately get to anger. I've had that question asked of me, by the way. Somebody says, is anytime you're angry, is fear always involved? You bet. I've never found an exception to that. And when I get fear and then I will ultimately get angry, and that may occur in a heartbeat, by the way, I will react. Now, I react essentially, kind of like Don was sharing, I react in basically only one of two ways. Either I will explode. If I've been carrying enough of this anger long enough, you will finally trip a trigger. If I've been spiritually unfit for a long period of time, and I haven't had to experience this now for a number of years, but I will eventually explode, and I will retaliate. Just automatic. I'll retaliate. That's my fault. Now, my other form of retaliation is, it goes on in here. I'm sure you can imagine what I'm saying. And I go off and pout. Screw you. That's basically what I'm saying. And I heard a guy say one time, and I'd not been through this process yet, and I heard a guy say one time, he said, you know, alcoholics are emotionally immature. I thought, the hell we are. My first time through this little old process, especially this part here, it began to get clear to me that I was a 47-year-old man in a body that was about 5 or 6 years, with a mind of about a 5 or 6-year-old. I did. I mean, isn't that what a little kid does? He gets mad. You know, we were hearing about it earlier. What's wrong with you? Nothing. Fine. No. And we either pout or we get angry. We throw a fit. Good God. That's my truth. I was emotionally immature. As you can probably understand, as I'm going through this, there are things that I am beginning to discover that I don't like about me. No wonder I have lived in a state of conflict my whole life. One part of me telling me I'm a swell guy. And the spirit inside of me saying, no, you're not. No, you're not. You know, so how is a guy going to go through this and feel good? By the way, I did go through this to feel good. And I didn't feel good. And that prompted a whole new resentment. But we won't get too caught up in that. But when we see our faults, we list them on paper. How did I react in that situation? Now, for me, it's kind of crucial that I say, how did I react in that situation? What's my fault? And the reason is because as a part of my amends, just as a part of my amends, I don't want to ever act that way again. And I need to know what was it I did here, because I don't want to have to keep repeating that. Not only do I want this up here cleaned up as part of my mind, but I don't want to act out here and keep doing the same things and keep causing the same damage. See, I really was an alky that truly was delusional in the sense that I did not think that I created chaos. I really thought I was kind of a harmonious rascal. And see, 10:30. What time did we start, Don? Okay. Let me tell you one little story that came out of inventory, and the truth about me that came out of inventory, and show you the great disparity between what I thought I was and what the truth about me was. When I first got sober, my middle child, he's a son and he's a great kid, and he's a kid that has just always had a huge, huge spirit. I mean, he's always been bigger than life from the time he was little. He was 3 years old when I first got sober, and when he was 9 years old, I'm sorry, 12 years old, and I was 9 years sober, he was starting the sixth grade. And he's a kid that during the summertime, he gets up early in the morning and he would go all day long, and he just full of life, played baseball, he did everything. They played in the park all day long, and we had a little farm, and he'd go out to that farm with me. And early on in that summer, I'd had a dear friend of mine who gave away, in our part of the country, they give away baseball caps that say Neodache Co-op or Seed and Feed or John Deere Tractor, and that's just kind of a deal. And they'd given me a hat, and I gave it to him, and it was a yellow and white hat. It had a lot of white on it and a lot of yellow on it. And I had given him that cap at the beginning of the baseball season, and I mean at the beginning of the summer, and he'd worn that hat all summer, and it was a favorite hat of his, and he wore it around, and by the end of the summer, it looked like it had been drug about 38 miles behind a truck, and it was the most god-awful looking hat you've ever seen in your life. And so right after Labor Day, school was starting, and I got up one morning, and magnanimous rascal that I am, I said, "Son, this is the first day of school, first day of sixth grade. Do you want to ride to school?" And, oh, my God, he was excited. You know how it is when you're that age. Your dad's going to take you to school. And, God, he was excited. And I said, "Let's go." And so I'm walking out to the car, and I'm, like I say, I'm 9 years sober, and I'm pretty successful, see. I'm a big shot around town, I just asked me, and I'll tell you. So I asked him, and I said, "We can get some weird thinking." So I said, she said, "Okay." And I said, "Let's go." And he said, so he started running around the house, and I said, "What in the world are you doing?" He said, "Dad, I got to get my cap." And I said, "You're what?" He said, "I got to get my cap." And I said, "You're not wearing that cap to school. If you are, I'm sure as hell not taking you. What will a teacher think about you?" See, that kid was so excited that morning. First day of school, his dad's going to take him to school, and he's going to get to ride with me, and blah, blah, blah. And he is so excited, and I immediately kill the spirit about, what's the teacher going to think about you, for God's sake? You're not wearing that silly cap. Years later, I looked at that little deal, and I looked at the real truth of the matter. And the truth of the matter was, there was terrible dishonesty in that. I was worried about, what is the teacher going to think about old Jerry? I'm a hot shot around town, by God. Now, let me tell you the rest of the truth that came to me through this little process here, through the power of prayer. I'm an alcoholic. I really should have been locked up many years ago, and that was totally justified by those folks. I look at that today. I have no quarrel with the decisions they were making about what to do with me. Now, here's a young kid who's doing great. I mean, just doing marvelously. And I'm trying to tell him what to do. You see the dichotomy of that? Hell, I have no business ever telling my kids what they ought to do. And through this little process here and being able to talk to you guys like we're doing here these weekends, I've learned to be able to do that. I've learned to be able to just to say, you know, my kids really are. They're great. Okay. I'll share any experience I've ever had with my kids. They know what I talk about and what I do. And I just share. They'll call me and say, "Dad, what do you think I ought to do?" And I say, "Hell, I don't know, son. Your judgment's always been a hell of a lot better than mine." Well, it is. You know, I finished college when I was 49 or 50 years old. Hell, he went right straight through school, worked his way through. Well, I mean, you know, I don't have real good judgment. I think he does. I think they both do. I know, but anyway, so when they call and I say, "Dad, what do you think I ought to do?" I said, "I don't know. Your judgment's better than mine. But I'll tell you what. I've had a little experience there, and I'll share that experience if you want to hear about it." "Oh, yeah. God, yeah. Tell us your story." My kids like to hear stories, too. They love to hear our experiences. Once in a while, I slip and start giving an opinion, and I have to catch myself. Real quickly, I guess I am on the way to Mexico. I didn't know it. You guys, for those of you in the back, I know I make a marvelous picture, so I'll stand up. You guys have no idea how fond we have become of you. This will go up in a very prominent place in my house, and it will help us remember you. Thank you very much. Let's take a little bit of a break. What time? Be back at about 5 till 11.
I'll share a little of my inventory just so you can see what it looks like. Inventory all the time is also going to go broke. You got to be open for business now and then. Okay. This is simply the house cleaning. I'm going to share a little piece of inventory with you just to show you the dimensions that I find it and the way I use it. I find 7 questions here. Can make a case for 8. Some people say 5. It doesn't matter. Selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, frightened. Where am I to blame? Where am I at fault? What's my mistake? Or where am I wrong? The key is to get that answer, to find out what's wrong. It says, "I'm putting out of my mind the wrongs others have done entirely. I never look for my part." That's a lie to me. If I'm looking for my part, that still assumes that you have a part. And I'll miss the truth. At this point, I put the wrongs that have been done to me completely out of my mind. Where am I at fault? That's all I'm interested in. You may even be wrong. That's all gone. It's as if it never happened. The principle of forgiveness is right here. Put it out of your mind. And there's a reason for that. If you don't, you can't get free. If you're hanging on to something, you are not free. And God will let you keep it just as long as you want it. Okay? And we'll take it as soon as you let it go, it's gone. Okay? We know about inventory with people and institutions and principles and all that. As a direct result of active hepatitis, I also developed neuropathy. What that means is that the nerve endings in my feet are alive and well 24 hours a day. I'm in constant chronic pain and have been for a number of years. And the reason I want to get this is because whether it's physical pain or psychic pain or emotional pain, if I'm suffering from it, so are you. I guarantee you, I share well. Pain is a distraction from my primary purpose, and I must find a way, with whether it's psychic or physical or emotional or spiritual pain, to be at peace with that. So I did some inventory on the pain. And this is how I do it. So check the book. You'll see how it works. I'm angry with the pain. Why? Because it diminishes my enjoyment of life. It is inconsistent with how I feel and with my attitude. It is a major distraction. It dominates me because I'm always aware of it. And that, by the way, is where suffering comes from. Suffering is me being self-aware. Anytime I'm aware of myself, I suffer. And I'm angry because I need medicine to keep it bearable. Now, I don't take any kind of painkiller except aspirin. But sometimes to be able to bear it, I need help. And I had to work through that. I was one that, one time I had that attitude that I'm taking nothing. Listen, pain will drive you crazy. Now, sometimes with the inventory, this information develops. The idea is that something is being hurt or threatened. And sometimes when I do inventory, and I did it with this one, between that third and fourth column, because this affects my self-esteem, how I feel about myself, my security, my financial. I was a rougher at the time this developed. I can't get up and down ladders anymore. So my security was being affected. My emotional security, because I'm Superman and all of a sudden I'm not. Okay. My personal relations with people. Personal relations are hampered when you go into the mode for very long. People say, when you come to them and say, talk about pain, whether it's emotional, physical, psychic, if you talk about it too much, they don't know what to tell you. And it affects the personal relations. I wish you'd just kind of go away. You know, most people are like me. After just so much, I don't want you around if you're going to whine. I'm busy whining myself. I got things to do. Anyway, so why does this pain threaten me? Well, it threatens my personal relations and my self-esteem because I'm not much fun to be with and people won't want to be with me. So it's a threat. My security and financial were being threatened because if I can't get up and down ladders, I can't make a living. And I began to see right there, wait a minute, that's stupid. This isn't the only job on the planet, for God's sake. It's just the one I'm invested in and attached to. My self-esteem, my security, my personal relations are threatened because if I am distracted, I may miss something important and fail. I don't know about you, but my great fear in life is always that I'm going to forget something important. And so I get to worrying about missing something, and I miss it all. A little trick I use, by the way, when I start getting overwhelmed, I do a what's on my mind list. It's nothing more than that. I make a list of what's on my mind. And that fear just evaporates because I'm afraid I'm going to forget something. Well, now it's all on paper. I won't forget it. It also aids me along the way to inventory because as I look at that list, it's clear about half of this shit's none of my business anyway. Okay? I don't have to worry about it. And from it then come the things I really do need to address. So, where am I selfish? I'm to ask myself, where am I selfish? Checking off, yes, I am, is insufficient for me. I already know I am. Where am I? I need to find that out. Well, I'm selfish because I do not want pain. For my personal preference, I should always feel good. Not very Freudian, I'm sorry. That's just that simple. I'm selfish because I want to enjoy life to the fullest at all times. Why me? I'm selfish because I should not have chronic pain. I don't like it. Self-seeking because I always want to appear okay. And there's another clue. It isn't whether I am okay or not. I want to appear okay. That's far more important than being okay to my ego. Yeah. I don't want you to see my weakness. Isn't that silly? My whole life is dependent, and yours is dependent, on my being able to show you my weakness, not my strength. That's what 12 Steps work is all about. Me revealing my weakness to you so that you know you're not alone. But I don't want you to see that. I'm self-seeking because I use the pain to gain attention. Oh, I hate that one. I should be above this. I get noble sometimes in the carrying of my pain. I only hobble a little. When you're watching. And I will make sure you are. God. I'm self-seeking because I do not want to be distracted from the things that I think are important. It's just the truth. I really don't. But the key is what I think is important. It's not the least bit important for me to be able to go up and down ladders. At this time, I thought it was. Okay. I do not want to be distracted from the things that bring me attention and strokes. Pain will distract me from being able to do the things. It's really hard to cut Z's on the bad guys when you can't walk. Okay. It really is. I want to feel good so I can do God's work better. Boy, that sounds good, doesn't it? That's really self-seeking. I want to feel better so I can do God's work. One of my dearest friends, one of the most effective people I have ever known, was a fellow named John Adams. Died of cancer at home when it came time they wanted to put him on chemo and all that stuff. And he said, oh, get away from me. I'm going to go home and die. It's my time to go. And the neighbors, I mean, we all went by to see John all the time. The neighbors were stunned. They talked with us about the numbers of people that came and comforted him as he died. They didn't get it. We went to see John because to the very moment that he went out, he was helping other people. He was listening to Fifth Steps, and he was talking to drunks, and he was useful all the way to the end. What a bunch of crap this is. He did God's work better than I'll ever do it while he was dying of cancer. So this is crap. It sure sounds good, though. My head will pick it up. Can you see how this begins to get you free? I'm dishonest to think that I will not or should not have pain. That's totally dishonest. I'm in the human condition on a planet where my tolerance of temperature is about a 30-degree range. I either have to take something off or put something on or whimper about it. Okay. If I go without water for more than a couple hours, my whole system begins to disintegrate. Just all kinds of reasons for pain. Of course I'm going to have it. It's dishonest to think that you're not going to have pain, psychic, spiritual, physical, or emotional. It's going to happen. I'm dishonest to think that I can do anything about it. Well, that'll free you up. If I can't do anything about it, what am I whining about? What am I worried about? Why would I put any more energy into it? There's absolutely nothing I can do about it. You know how I know that? I went to the finest doctors around. They said, yep, nothing we can do about it. They said, if what we just done doesn't work, you're either going to die or have to have a new liver. Oop. Nothing I can do about it. Well, that wasn't bad news, by the way. I'm going to die anyway. And I know that. And I don't want a new liver. The one I've got doesn't work all that good, but it works good enough. I don't want anybody going in there, taking it out and putting somebody else's in there. I'm used to this one. Okay? I have no idea how yours is going to work. No thanks. It's dishonest for me not to see the gift in the pain. I want to tell you a story. See, I know that everything from the day I surrendered to God is a gift. And there's a great gift in pain. And I won't give a sermon on that, but I want to tell you a story about this period of time, because there was, during all of this, as it was developing, I was on interferon. So I'm sick from the hepatitis. They give you interferon, and its whole purpose is to make you sicker than you ever thought you could be. I can't tie my shoes. I'm dying emotionally and all that stuff. But I had a big book workshop every Tuesday morning at 6 o'clock. And I'd wake up at 5 and I'm fine. And I'd go to the workshop and I was fine. I'd get home and I was fine. And then I'd fall apart. And I never missed a commitment that I had. Somehow God took me through all that. But I went to that workshop one morning about the time I'm thinking I can't see the gift in this pain, because I couldn't. And it bothered me because I knew there was a gift there. I just couldn't see it. And my friend Chuck Marr was there, and it stunned me because Chuck was dead. That's what I thought. He had died of cancer. That's what I was told. Chuck came to that meeting because he had heard I was on interferon, and he had been also. And he came to 12-step me. To tell me how to survive the treatment, not the problem, the treatment. See, he had survived that. And if you haven't had that, I can't tell you what that's about. It's horrible. And if you have survived something like that, and we all have, you must tell someone about it. It's a spiritual imperative. You've got to share it with somebody. And there wasn't anybody around for him to share it with. So I became a gift to him that morning. I was his gift. He was able to help me, and that helped him. And I finally saw the gift. But I couldn't before that. Okay? Dishonest to think that this pain diminishes me in any way whatsoever. It doesn't. It just means I don't play tennis anymore. But you know, I never really liked tennis much anyway. It's dishonest to always be brave about it. That's a grave dishonesty, you know. These things aren't just to handle this problem. They are to tell me the serious danger I'm in at all times. It's very, very dishonest for me to think that because I am a spiritual being, that I have to be perfect at all times and show that at all times. Bullshit. There's days I hurt, folks. And I will try not to burden you with that. But there's days this is a bitch. And that's just the way that is. So don't go about being brave because you're 10 years sober. If you hurt, tell somebody, for God's sake. Okay? It's silly to be hurting the way we hurt sometimes, but tell somebody. I feel silly. Well, you should. But sit down and have a cup of coffee with me. Let me tell you the goofy thing I did last week. I'm frightened. It's just to ask why I'm frightened. Frightened that it'll go on. And that I will become depressed and useless. It's very real fear, but it's a silly fear. Frightened that people will become tired of me. Okay. That I will not learn to live with it and become a bitter old man. See, my vision of me when I get old is Tyrone J. Horni. Remember Tyrone from Laugh-In? He's the little old guy. Yawala Walnetto. He'd sit down next to her and make a pass at her. That's me. Got his cane. My intention when I get old is that if you walk by and you're cute, I'm going to trip you with my cane. Yawala Walnetto. Not a bitter old man. But I will become dependent on medicine and on other people. And there's my clue. I don't want to become dependent. I want to be in charge. And I can't be. Jerry talked about the mistake. I believe the same thing. What's the mistake in my thinking? I've got a whole mistaken way of thinking here. First of all, it's a mistake in giving so much power to the pain. When I start concentrating on a problem, I give it power. It becomes real. I create it. I feed it. My emotional distress feeds on fear and on anger. And it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And I'm giving it all my power. It's a mistake to believe that it's more than just a passing event. That's all it is. You all are familiar with the various kinds of pain. At the moment I'm conscious of them, they're worse than they've ever been. But if something else comes along and I get busy with it, I'm no longer conscious of it. It's a passing event. Okay? It's a mistake for me to believe for a moment that those who love me will not understand. What a terrible thing I do to people when I'm afraid that you will cut me off. I don't think well of you at that point, do I? Shame on me to think that anyone would think the less of me because of something this silly. To not trust in God to see me through. Now, where am I at fault? It's just to ask that. Where am I at fault in believing that this little bit of pain will cut me off anyway? In giving it more power than it has and thinking that I must do something about it, and that ended it. For me to think I must do anything about this is ridiculous. Nothing can be done about it anyway. Whether it's psychic, emotional, mental, or physical, nothing can be done about it. And an interesting thing happened. See, all these things cut me off from God. Can you see how they cut me off? I don't want to be cut off anymore. So I went back to my basic prayer. Remove the fear and direct my attention to what you'd have me be. And grant me the strength to just get on about the business. And an interesting phenomenon has taken place that I want to tell you about. I can't tell you how I did it except following this. I no longer suffer from pain. I have pain. Pain and suffering do not have to go together. We think they do. With my ego, they must. I really need to share it with you. Okay. And of all the people I know, we know that most. I still have alcoholism. I no longer suffer from it. Alcoholism is a very painful condition because it's based on selfishness and self-centeredness. Constantly aware of myself. And that's painful. The only real joy in my life is when I'm aware of you, not when I'm aware of me. So this process is not to find out who I am so I can glory in it. It's to get rid of all of that. So I can see I am you. I really enjoy myself when I'm by myself. I really do. I always have. I'm really interesting. Oh, yeah. Well, I am. But I really enjoy being with you, too. Okay? Because you're really interesting. Some of you are even strangely interesting. I think about joy, because, you know, I still have this tendency to want to feel good all the time. It's not going to happen, sorry. And so I began to get some prayers from it. Please, God, don't let me feel bad about feeling bad. Please, God, don't let me feel bad about not feeling good. Please don't let me get screwed up about being screwed up. I can go to Him with those things. So I think about joy. You know what joy is for me today? Being in the presence of my granddaughter. She's a pistol. And she thinks I am the finest thing that ever came down the pike next to her mother. Her mother has equipment to feed her that I don't have. But my daughter and I experience joy, not just fun. We have joy together because I know how to communicate with babies. And we have fun. Her mother doesn't like some of the things I teach her. You know how to communicate with babies? It's easy. And they'll go. She loves it. She's going to get it someday. Okay. I won't do that if I have this going on. If I'm so aware of how bad I feel, whether it's physical or emotional or mental, I don't have time for... I use that same one for some of my babies. I said, as soon as you're through with inventory, you're going to hear a sound. That's your head coming out of your ass. So I want the kinds of things that focus on the pain in the feet. I want to learn to be rid of the cause, not just for that pain, but for all the other pain. And there's a price to pay for that. It says we will enjoy peace of mind when this is all over. There will be peace of mind. And you're going to have to learn to enjoy it. Because we don't enjoy it naturally. When there isn't some kind of pain to focus on, my whole system says, oops, something's wrong here. Let's start something. And it starts it. Okay? And as we go on through here and clear this away, we are given more and more in the 10th, 11th, and 12th step, particularly in the 10th and 11th step, a way to keep from starting it up again. So that you can enjoy some peace of mind. My God, I can't tell you how much fun it is to just sit in a chair. Just sit there. If you can get 20 seconds, you've really done something. You can eventually get 2 minutes. If you can get past 2 minutes, things will happen to you. They'll happen within you. I reached a place one day that I'm going to leave this planet from, and I can't tell you about it. It was so still and so fine that that's where I want to leave from. And I know how to get to it that quick now. So even if you hit me with your car, that's where I'm going from. It's a very scary place because I don't want to ever come back from it. Ever. I have to be brought back. You got to be able to enjoy that. That sounds like a scary place, doesn't it? Absolute silence. Well, anyway, so that's how I do it, and I just keep doing it. There's some more of it. This is what I did on the plane. It's the same kind of crap, just really a different focus. It's no different. Selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, fear. I'm not going to get what I want when I want it. I am going to get what I want when I want it. Now, I did an inventory one time, a fear inventory on my wife, she was in it. One of the major fears was being without money. You ever had that fear? That's laying up here if you want to see it. I was afraid of being without money because I was afraid she would leave me. Later on in the same list, I was afraid she would stay. Yeah, but then she'd be making all the money and be down on me all the time. And that's how silly fear is. And this little system we have for investigating fear is absurdly simple. Put down what you're afraid of, why you're afraid of it, and where self-reliance is failing you. And I use a very simple question to discover that. What am I selfishly trying to whatever? And that's just laying up here if anybody wants to read it. I need to be free of fear because this is where the whole thing comes together. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, it says, and as I get through a resentment and a fear inventory, it becomes clear to me that I'm assigning roles to everybody. And to me, and to you, and my fear is that you won't remember your lines. Okay? And if you don't remember your lines, I don't win. I don't know how to interact when I'm in that state. So I'm busy assigning you a role and you a role, and I begin to see my prejudices. And the greatest mercy of all, and I believe this is all about mercy, is in that prayer that we're given to take care of fear. The rest of the world has to learn to cope with fear. Do you know that? Look at all the methods, the self-help books and all that. You have to learn to push through your fear, learn how to use your fear, how to conquer your fear. Shit. I love fear. It makes me feel powerful. Or it locks me up tight. Okay? I can't live with fear. It destroys me. And so what do I have to do with fear here? Even after you write it, that isn't how we deal with it. That's just how we identify it. God, remove this fear from me and direct my attention to what you would have me be. And there's the revelation. It doesn't say, God, direct my attention to what you would have me do. God, direct my attention to what you would have me be. And I began to wake up. I am not what I do. That's my big fear. That's my problem. When I start identifying with what I do, I'm in trouble because anytime I can't do it, I don't exist. I was a roofer who couldn't roof anymore because he couldn't climb ladders. And I was afraid I couldn't make a living. Well, I can't make a living as a roofer, that's all. So I'm not a roofer. One of the reasons that I have not gone back to the penitentiary, because ex-cons always go back, you know. Haven't you been told that? I'm not an ex-con, that's why. I'm a man, and I've been to prison. I don't be no ex-con. They have trouble. All the time they have trouble. If I am anything, I'm in trouble. If I am a father, any time I am not being a father, I'm in trouble. 'Cause